just have one question committee meeting, so my part of my mind is still there. We will visit Mr. Matona. I hope it's Matona so that I don't cross the line. Okay. And we'll visit GTG, Mr. Tumelo, Fupa. Am I correct? So please don't speak to me, thank you. And over to you, Mr. I don't think members of the officials want to know the members of the committee which we should speak to. I'm not people who are Nandi, and I represent the Western Cape in the MCOC. I don't have to mention the same company. It's written on my forehead.
I'm Priscilla Tanda from Pumala.
Swiss Bia, Kipokoku.
Good morning, Sherry Chen, representing Tao King.
Lalina Mchembe, I also do not represent any political party but my province, and I'm going on with you.
I'm Wendy Lalit from the Western Cape.
Okay. So, thank you very much indeed for the opportunity to be here with you again to discuss the work of the DTI. I don't know how to digress, but I'd like to go back to the comments you made in respect of the presentation that you were in the media. I wasn't aware of that. I wasn't aware of the event and so on. But we can come back to that. I'd like to establish that so we can always get feedback so we can improve the things that we do. But thank you very much indeed. We are presenting today the annual report for 2006-2007. Now, we've had nearly 12 months since the end of that financial year that ended in March last year. And so much has happened since then. So I shall try, although what I'm going to present is based on the document that we proposed in Parliament, our annual report, and it's limited to the issues covered there. A lot of that work is ongoing work. So I shall try to update as I go along where we are with various things that we are doing. I've also brought in my delegation DDGs who are responsible for different aspects of our work to fill in the details, to fill in the information that you may require. I would like you to take advantage of their presence here to raise specific issues. We were asked, I did not bring the entire management team of the department because in the brief we got, it was indicated that you were interested in, amongst others, our international work, but our work also in relation of supporting enterprises and so on. But I'm sure we should be able to deal with all of the issues that you'd be interested in talking about. Now, also, what we will do in the content of the report, you will see, because the reporting by government departments is governed by certain rules stipulated by National Treasury. So, for example, we report on our activities and we report on output. This sometimes is limiting because we often are not able to report on outcomes as such, but where we have some outcomes in the report that we are presenting, we shall be glad to highlight and emphasize that. So we will cover our successes, we'll cover our challenges, and as I said, that's where possible, reflect some of our plans going forward. The report is organized in accordance with that framework. We will reflect very briefly on the economic context. Dynamic as it is, as you will see, it's always important for us to evaluate our work in relation to the reality of our economy. And then we will recall our objectives, the objectives to which we are working. And then, as I said, our achievements, progress and challenges. And then we will begin to look at the spending trends, the resources, how we use the resources that are allocated to us. And then that will come some conclusion. Now, the economic context, and you have to recall that we were reporting for the period 2006 to 2007 when conditions in the economy were very dynamic, very upbeat. We were all very positive about the performance of the economy, which was growing at around 5% for a few years up to last year. Driven by domestic expenditure, which was growing quite robustly, government expenditure, and fixed investment by both the private sector and the public sector. Those were the drivers of growth, and many of them will remain drivers of our growth. Of course, some challenges were beginning to emerge very sharply, and those challenges are getting bigger in respect of the current account deficit. And this is driven mainly by strong imports compared to export. But what's been encouraging is that those imports have not only been consumer goods, it's also been capital goods, machinery, as them prepare themselves to expand their production and so on. We've also seen inflationary pressures which are continuing and, as you all know, have forced the Reserve Bank to increase interest rates. We've had a couple of increases of the interest rate. So the interest rates are under pressure as a result of very strong inflation. We've also seen arising out of all of this some turnaround in employment creation, significant strong growth of in jobs, which we hope to sustain. I've spoken about manufacturing companies have significantly expanded production, investment, capacity utilization in many industries is up to the limit. Small growth in exports are still challenging, and this is largely because of the exchange rate, but also because of some weaknesses in our production economy. Now, already last year, as we were concluding that financial year, some of the sectors which are in fact dampening our growth prospects with the unit image. I've spoken about capacity utilization, inflation, which also has affected inputs into production, exchange rate and interest rate. And I might just add that currently that those sectors will combine with the challenge of electricity. And we would expect, as I'm sure we will hear from the Minister of Finance or something, that our growth projections are going to be revised down as such. That's going to be in the region of about 3%, down from nearly 5%. It's a result of a combination of sector, domestic sector, but also here, global growth, global economic conditions, which are also turning rather in an adverse direction. Now, we highlight these issues to indicate that we must, as part of our response, focus on supporting the real economy. And that is the fundamental mandate of the Department of Trade and Industry, to support the real economy, to ensure that there is proper coordination between macroeconomic variables, you know, interest rates, exchange rates, and real investment on the ground, microeconomic reforms and so on. I need to also say that the department works within the cluster system in government. We are the coordinator of the economic cluster in government, so we work with other government departments. And there we have a program of action that also seeks to address issues related to the real economy, including efficiencies and undertaking industrial policy sectoral initiatives. Now, very quickly, you will notice, because we've covered this area of our strategic objectives, which are to help drive the accelerated and shared growth initiative, promoting investment and growth in the industrial and services economy, focusing on raising exports, and improving market access for exports within international markets, promoting product participation of particularly previously excluded people, and contributing to the development of Africa, because our economy is very much integrated with the rest of the African economy. We do need to pay attention to improving growth on the continent. We, as a department, do many things, and it's often very difficult to make sense of precisely how we organize ourselves and how we account. So increasingly, we have sought to organize our work in relation to key thematic areas. The first one being national development, then trade, investment, and export, broadening participation, regulation, and administration and coordination that deals with issues of over-resourcing the department. Now, if I now move to what have we achieved in the period covered. In the area of industrial development, for the year that we were completely preoccupied as a department, all parts of the department, including our agencies, with finalizing this comprehensive statement of industrial development. Intense, very extensive consultation, including with Parliament and various stakeholders, went into putting the document together. We were very satisfied that this is a very good document. that provide the framework for the work of growing manufacturing and developing services. Alongside all of that work, there's been work in relation to key sectors of the economy, looking at opportunities for unlocking the potential of those sectors, and they're listed there. But we've also been continuing a very strong momentum in two key sectors, business process outsourcing, where we, as you'll see later on, we have now designed a support program, a government support and some assistance program to this sector. And tourism, again, yeah, in tourism, we have now sessions, tourism-specific support program. And then we have an important program called Industrial Participation Program, which seeks to leverage on huge procurement, such as, for example, the arms procurement, where some of those companies that have been given those have commitments, obligations to invest in various industries and so on. It's a very important program which has generated very good results. But of course, any procurement by government in excess of $10 million has to be covered by this program. There must be an offset program. We've also, as usual, successfully dispersed a number of support incentives for enterprises and industries. The Small Medium Enterprise Development Program, SMEDP, is very popular, one of the most popular, the most successful programs of the department, which sometime last year, 2007, we've had to suspend so that we can review it and improve it. So although it's been successful, it has some weaknesses that we needed to address, so we suspended it, but we will be relaunching it in a new and improved format in this current financial year, or the next current year. Also, the strategic investment project was a very, very successful program, as well as the critical infrastructure program. Members will be aware also of another program that's very important for CTR, the Industrial Development Zone, which in the period under review witnessed a major turnaround as we attracted a lot of investor interest in those IDZs, mainly the IDZs in the Eastern Cape, Kuha and Islanda. Film and TV has been another growth area for the support of enterprises and projects by TCI. We have this film rebate scheme, which has been doing very, very well. Highly subscribed, and in recognition of that and the need to focus it a lot more on local production, we have also reformed and modified the program. It will now have a separate, locally focused component to it, which we shall be launching soon in this the next financial year. And then, of course, the number of programs to support innovation and technology. The one which is quite popular, being the SPI, the SPI, Support Program for Industrial Innovation. I think the figures are there for the development of the incentive. And then, of course, there's another one called TRIP, which is to work with industries and universities in developing specific skills for different sectors of the economy. We also do very good work in the standards, technical, what we call technical infrastructure. We've been doing a number of things there, which have also been supported by legislation, and you'll see when we come to legislation, we have front here legislation which has been adopted, passed by Parliament, to support our technical infrastructure, to update it and modernize it, so that we are part of the modern global economy and trade system, both for goods coming into our markets and our goods going into foreign markets. As part of capacity building for different sectors of the economy, of technology, skills, and so on, we have started a program of what we call centers of excellence, which are located in universities, different universities, to help us develop the skills in the areas of aerospace, clothing and textiles, and advanced engineering. Our work also focuses on what we call advanced manufacturing, so we've got initiatives to support particularly the aerospace industry. The financial aerospace industry is integrated to some extent, which we want to expand, integrated into global supply chain. We're talking with the global aerospace and aeroplane manufacturers, Boeing, Airbus, and so on, to source some of their products from South Africa. So we're working with this industry to position ourselves in South Africa. These are important high-value industries that are very important for our economy, development of our economy. We, as the Treasury always requires of us, to review our incentives, to see which ones are working well. We've done a comprehensive review of our incentives, which is in fact helping us as we go forward to improve, to initiate new incentives as well. So we constantly hope that as we go forward, the application of the incentives will improve. Moving to the international arena, chairs and members, our Air Force and a lot of activity has focused on the World Trade Organization. This very difficult negotiation that we've been seized with for some time since Doha. Since 2000, we've been grappling with a difficult issue with this negotiation. It's not making significant progress, and as I speak, I am not sure whether we will succeed in reaching a deal here. But Mr. Karim is here to give us a sense of where we stand in relation to that. We've also been undertaking other very important trade initiatives, trade relations initiatives with the European Union, and Chairperson refers to the work in relation to EPA, which is also very challenging negotiations there. As well as, of course, our own agreement with the European Union, which is due for review, and we've been doing that work in relation to the work on EPA. We've succeeded to conclude good agreement with the rest of Europe, that not only the EU, the so-called European Free Trade Association. I'm told that there is a list of acronyms in your book. So, forgive us if we use too many acronyms. It's just the nature of our regular course for purpose of this presentation. So, EFTA, European Free Trade Association, Switzerland, Norway, Liechtenstein, and Iceland, all very important high-income countries which have given us very generous market access for our exports, concluded that agreement. You know about the work we did with the United States, trying to conclude a free trade agreement, but faced a number of challenges there. So I think bilateral trade relations with the U.S. At a low key, we failed to conclude the agreement. We focused on other developing countries, other significant developing countries, India, Brazil, China. And I'm sure you will also know about this initiative called IPSA. It's been very central in developing and taking that forward, focusing on trade and investment aspects. That also includes the work we're doing with Mercosur, which is a grouping of South American developing countries led by Brazil. We've also been involved in trade negotiations with them. Amongst other things, has been the work on China, trying to manage our relationship with China. And of course, members will remember that at the beginning of last year, we introduced quotas against the Chinese imports and clothing, mainly to provide relief to local manufacturers who are under pressure from massive searches of Chinese products. These measures are still in place. They were intended to be in place until the end of this year. We are involved in various things on which I'm sure Leila Karim will expand on in relation to our relations with Africa and regional integration. Particularly focusing on concluding bilateral investment protection agreements. There's a lot of investment from South Africa into the continent which requires the security of a protection framework. These things are very well established instruments to govern investment and trade relations between countries. We've also been working on the Southern African Customs Union, SACU, which, as you know, has a new agreement for the Customs Union, which establishes a number of institutions. And a lot of work has been done in building those institutions to make it a truly democratic organization. In terms of exports and investment, we undertake a lot of promotional work abroad, taking exporters who want to market their goods, participating in exhibitions in various parts of the world, as well as promoting inward investment. Some of these initiatives have been led by the President, Deputy President, and of course some of them by our ministers. An important work which I'm sure you will be interested in is in the increasing coordination with the provinces in relation to investment promotion. What we were seeing was a lack of coordination. We all go into the same countries abroad trying to recruit investment, but all competing with each other. Now we are a lot more coordinated, because investment promotion has to be done on the basis of targeted opportunities, targeted investments in the different provinces and so on. So we've got a good job on that, and I'm sure Irfan Sharma will expand on that. This has been very impressive work, which culminated last year in us holding jointly with the Provincial Investment Promotion Agency and International Investment Conference, which we held in Durban. This year we will host, we intend it to be an annual event, and this year the conference will be held here in the Western Cape. Now, if I move on to the area of broadening participation, you will know that here too there's been a lot of work, mainly focused on implementing the new legislation in respect of small enterprise development, the so-called Small Enterprise Development Act, that establishes SEDA, the Small Enterprise Development Agency, which we've been rolling out and have made great progress indeed in rolling out the offices, the network of support infrastructure for small business. 47 offices, CEDAW offices established throughout the country, with the provincial offices in all of the provinces. This is supported by the enterprise innovation sector, incubation sector, as well as the work of CULA, which has also seen great progress, great expansion of its activities, CULA, in lending, to a point where we now have reached the limit of what the CULA, the current CULA model could achieve. It's the model of guarantee and so on, the bank through and directly to enterprises. We're now reviewing whether in fact CULA shouldn't be allowed to lend directly to enterprises. It's an issue which we will drive very hard in this coming year, in this coming financial year. And then also microfinance via SAMOF, South African Microfinance Agency, which also has been running out its network since it was started just over 3 years ago. So great progress there. The network of support is there. Now we, going forward, we will be looking at the quality of the support, strengthen the quality of the support, and the capacity of this network to deliver effective support to small enterprises. You will know that we concluded the work on putting BEE, or a framework for broad-based economic empowerment, when we concluded the Code of Good Practice, which we presented last year in February. And we're now implementing these codes, working with industries in terms of alignment of finance sector charters with the codes. We are also focusing increasingly in an area that has been challenging us, where we are not really effective, which is the work in relation to supporting local economic development. Because local economic development is a joint competence of all levels of government. In fact, economic development is shared between national government, provincial government, and local government. But we as a department have not really been very effective. But we've recognized it, so increasingly we are making very important initiatives, working with the Department of Local Government, and also working with our agencies in helping to support local economic development. So I think it's an area going forward that will be a core area, an area that we will be emphasizing. We've also been working on women economic empowerment. We've been working on a framework to support women enterprise development from within. I'm pleased that we have succeeded after a long time working on a fund, a dedicated women economic fund, which we have launched, the Deputy President launched it on Monday. The initial capitalization is 100 million, but we intend to grow this over time as we bring in other players, the IDC, for example, and all which are a part of this, but entities like ESCOM and so on have also indicated an interest. You know about the Toronto Women and Child Network for Women, which is a network, and they undertook activities to promote women empowerment and women's access to finance. Another area which has challenged us, but we intend to emphasize it because this whole area of broadening participation is going to be a major focus, a major area of emphasis as we go forward. So the area of cooperatives is one where we haven't really made sufficient progress, but we are looking at this and we are reviewing our strategy in relation to cooperatives, and we intend to massify our efforts in relation to promoting cooperatives. We have also in the year under review undertook research to implement a decision that the cabinet has taken that we must use procurement, we must use public procurement to provide small enterprises with the market for their goods. One of the challenges, in addition to access to finance, one of the challenges that small enterprises face is market for their products. However, on the other hand, government procures the massive resources for procurement. So we've done this work and have identified a list of 10 products that are mostly procured from small business, and we will set aside those products for preferential procurement from small enterprises. So I'm very pleased that we finished that work and the cabinet has endorsed it. So going forward, we will be implementing with Treasury, because procurement, public procurement, is covered by Treasury. These products are, for example, products in clothing and textiles, advertising, media, communication, cleaning services, interior and exterior furniture supplies, events, coordination and management, maintenance, repairs, vehicle, body, servicing, travel, coordination, shuttle services, food and catering service, stationery, and printing. Those are some of the products that are mostly procured from small businesses. And so we believe that if we were able to sacrifice these products for small businesses, it would help to support the small business development in the economy. Now, you also be aware, Chair Member, that we produce a number of publications to promote information about our products and services. We also have an outreach program where we go to different provinces to hold information seminars, where we train our agencies as well therapy provided integrated service delivery to economic citizens, particularly people in marginalized areas and so on. The Deputy Minister, Cabet, calls it taking the DGI to the people. So that's ongoing work indeed that we do. The last major area I'd like to cover is the area of regulation. And there, one of the most significant, one of the most successful, I think, interventions by the DGI is to establish this new credit regulation regime through the Credit Act, the National Credit Act, as well as the National Credit Regulator. That's been a very, very effective, a very important, very necessary intervention, which we are busy implementing now. The regulator is very active as we speak. We've been undertaking work to review the company's legislation to modernize our company's legislation. It's based on an act from the 1970s, whereas the company's forms of corporation have changed, and that number of corporate governance challenges that have emerged, which require that we update our legislation in terms of companies. For example, if you hear about the fidentia issue of last year, that has caused a need for us to examine companies also. We've been doing this work for a very long time, and I'm pleased that we now come to the completion of this work. The bill has been done, we published it for public comment, and now all of the changes that have come from the comments have been integrated into the Act, and we will now, in this year, this coming sitting of Parliament, we will come and table this in Parliament. Similarly, we've been doing work on elaborating consumer protection legislation. For a country with our level of development, consumer protection is highly underdeveloped in this country. So we put in place what I believe is world-class legislation to protect consumers. And that also will be something we're bringing into Parliament this year. There's a lot of concern and attention on competition legislation and our effectiveness as a department in regulating competition. This economy is still characterized by dominant players who often engage in anti-competitive practices. I'm pleased that we've now undertaken a major review of our competition law. Strengthening to enable us to deal a lot more decisively with anti-competition, anti-competitive behavior, and anti-competitive outcomes. For example, just keeping a few. Competition law works on the basis of a complaint or a petition. Somebody must say, I suspect that this company is engaging in anti-competitive before we can embark on an investigation. Now we're saying that the minister must be in a position where we suspect that a particular industry is not operating on the basis of fair competition to undertake an inquiry without anyone launching a petition. Those are some of the issues that we are looking at. We're also looking at strengthening the competition authorities so that they can be a lot more effective in enforcement of competition law. Because our law is very good, but the enforcement of it might need to be improved. And so we're working on in this area. It's going to be one of the most important areas of regulation for for the department in this year, particularly as the competition authorities succeed in exposing different anti-competitive practices, such as, for example, in relation to brain, milk, and medical equipment. So that could be an area of activity. The corporate amendment bill was introduced in 2006 in Parliament and it passed. We've also processed an area of intellectual property, applications by FIFA for the protection of the event in 2010 against ambush marketing and so on. As you know, FIFA submitted a list of terms and names and so on that they wanted to protect. So we've processed that, decided what we'll give them, what we won't give them, and so on. For example, you know, they wanted us to protect you know, names like Bloemfontein 2010 or South Africa 2010 and so on. There's a whole short list. So we've refused to give them this because the effect of that would be to limit the opportunities of South African enterprises in benefiting from the event. But of course, based on what they have had previously, because there is a precedence here, based on what they enjoy in other areas, usually we give them what we thought was fair. We're very happy, and I'm sure they're also happy with that. So it's been work that we were doing in the period and review. We've also passed in a year to reach the reporting. A number of bills, measurement units, measurement standards, accreditation legislation, and amendments to the Close Corporations Act. We've also introduced regulations for, in the area of competition and in the area of credit, as well as in the area of metrology. Those are some of the other legislation that we passed. As I indicated, that gives you a list of legislation, Chair, and you were asking me about this. The list of legislation that we intend to bring in the coming period. Most of it is highly advanced, highly developed, the drafting has been done and so on, and we've been engaging with state law advisors and so on. And some of it, as I said, cabinet has already approved that the legislation should come to Parliament. Of course, if being the last year of this government, and therefore the likely that everyone is going to be pushing their legislation, we will be forced to prioritize legislation. So it may well be that not all of these things are presented. Certainly, the lottery amendment bill is one that may need to be delayed just for practical reasons. Most of these are already in the pipeline. There's also a lot of work in the area of income and gambling, which also, you know, is a joint competence of the provinces. So we have regular interactions also via our main GMAC, the Income Council and Gambling Council. I won't spend too much time on that. The last area in our report deals with administration and coordination. Now, we have spoken about this in this house, the challenge of human resources, which is a challenge that all of governments confront. We still, in the Hirosana review, we filled the 213 vacancies out of 373, which put us our vacancy rate at 27%. And the reason for that, you will see this is a constant figure within the last year when we checked the figures, is that for every one that we recruit, if someone else that resigns. So we feel like we are in a standstill. So if you look at the numbers, you might think that in fact we were doing nothing about patients. But that is because our people are highly marketable, are highly attractive to people within the CCR. In the economy that is confronting the skills shortage, so our people, the young people come to the TGI, they spend 2-3 years, perhaps 5 years, and then they leave, and then they go to the private sector, and then they double, triple their salaries, and so on. Secondly, we have numerous examples of people that work for TGI. So, to a point where I have come to accept that we must just as a department and government that we will be a training ground for the economy. Now, of course, it's human capital information, so ideally we want it in the public sector, but if it's in the private sector, it's not so bad. But of course, this creates enormous challenges for us. We are working very hard at this. We've got contracted HR companies that help us to headhunt and to look for the best skills. So it remains an area of challenge. It emphasizes the need for us to work on a retention strategy and to train, because we're bringing young people with a lot of experience, we train them. And give them opportunity. However, what is pleasing is that in the market, in the graduate market, some organizations did a survey of 15,000 graduates who also ranked DTI amongst the best places as far as they're concerned to work for. So we are quite attractive out there. But as I said, young people, they come in to spend 3 years and then they leave. This draws attention to the issue of public service salary, public service remuneration. Because there are those who will come and recognize the public service as a place where they want to make a contribution. But others will do a simple comparison. What am I getting in the private sector? What government offering and so on? So it is a very difficult issue. We're working clearly with the Department of Public Service Administration, and as you know, they're always trying to review and improve, you know, the salary structure and so on. But it remains indeed a challenge. In the area of corporate governance, I am pleased, and members will know this, that we have a history, an unbroken record of unqualified audits for a very, very long time. We are one of those departments that when examples are made of good systems of control, we're very proud of that. We protect this very jealously, this tradition of managing our finances very well, including our agencies. Out of the 18 or so agencies, they all have unqualified reports, except recently for two agencies. I think one of them is Samar, but the new agency that has been started and so on for the to go a long while for their controls to come into play, but we manage our finances very well. We, in the yesterday review, also appointed a number of boards of directors in the SAP agency of the board, the SAPS, the Metrology Advisory Committee, the National Credit Regulator, and the International Trade Administration Commission. We also appointed boards in the summer, and then DPRO effect in the field of summer review. We also appointed a CEO of the company office. I think a member of me will know DPRO. You had an opportunity to visit us last year. We've also appointed a new commissioner of the competition commission. As I indicated, this graph shows you our spending pattern. And you will see that consistently we spent in the late 90s percentage-wise of the money that we had to get given. Under expenditure for the period under review is 3%. So this means that we spend our budget as a department. And I've been saying that when I look at the staff of the department, the way, how hard they work and their commitment, I know that we can do more if we were able to get more money. And this is what we always say to the Treasury, that we can do more if we get more money. So today, we will hear what the Minister of Finance has allocated to our work, because he will be making a statement this afternoon. And I hope to see improvements in the money that we get. If for some of the other expenditure has to do with a rollover of 70 million for business process of supporting the program on food fortification between us and the Department of Health, where we were supposed to translate this 20 million to them. So you will see it's about 109 million banks after the sale. A very large budget, 3 billion, just under 4 billion. Now, this indicates the structure of our budget. 27% of our budget is directly transferred to our agency. Your competition, your CPRO, credit regulator, and so on. 53% goes to incentives, which is enterprise support. 10% goes to paying the staff. If we take out the budget, the agencies, it's 8% of our budget. It's for compensation for the employees. 12% is for us to undertake projects and programs, the kind of stuff that we were talking about, that have been reported about. And of that, 7% is already committed. So that is about 5% of our budget. Money to undertake new projects, new activities with. So if you actually look at this, you can see just how underfunded, I think. We're not fully funded as a department, but it's something that we seized and gained engaged with National Treasury on. This is just a further analysis of our budget and our current medium-term objectives. So I think the information is there for you to look at, so I won't spend time on it. In conclusion, Chair, I'm pleased that of all of the objectives that we've set ourselves and the annual report, the document, the document on the annual report has the details. You'll see the things that we've set ourselves, what we've achieved and so on. So I'm pleased that we have achieved our targets. Clearly, we are the first one to admit that we have challenges. We are aware of those challenges, we are working on them. Because there's only one thing that drives us as a department. We want to be as excellent as we can be in the work that we do, to serve our people, to develop this economy. And we count on your support and on any feedback that you will have for us. So I'm pleased to present to you this report. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, teacher. You must have now engaged the industry person. And the media. And so on. And Sunday. I see you not looking at the Sunday. Looking at the Sunday. Thank you for congratulations. I'm always here, so. Mr. Manager. Mr. Foreman. So far over the forehand, Mr. Leon and Kim Chamberlain, Mr. Kamed, Mr. McCollum, and Mr. Chamberlain.
Thank you very much. Ah, yes, Mr.
I know what you said. Yes, I know. Let me just say thank you very much, Gigi, and your team. I take it into the collective way. You know, you shed some light on many questions we had last year. That's a big on the presentation. A few things. You know, as I went through the book and your slides, I had questions, but you know, whenever I turn to another page, my question would be answered. So for the first time, you won't have many questions for me. For the first time. But let me just say something on what you also commented.
I'm relieved about that.
For the first time, and you know I have more than 20. On the issue of the coming bill, I want members to really say something that, as we have said, I also want to maybe suggest that you use your influence to the minister such that the 76th one starts with the NCOP because we have this long cycle. Our cycle is about 6 weeks, which can take up to 8 to 10 weeks, the whole 10 sometimes, depending on what is happening at that particular time. Look, we have been in the Gambling Amendment Bill, and we still are going back to this negotiating money. And this was with us last year. So if you could just do us that maybe. Anyway. You also said it, which I, you know, I phoned the Roj some time last week. I'm not saying it's about the smooth teaching, but I'm not saying it's just too thorough what way I, as a personal, was able to assist somebody. It's not me who assisted. It's I minor to just pick up the phone and phone. I haven't done anything. I must not even try and say with it quickly. It was not me. It was HI. And I must really thank you and congratulate you, and I hope you will do it not only to members of parliament, but any other individual who needs some assistance. Whether he or she will be assisted with something else, but just responding says something to me. Like when we called the IGC, he came back to me and said, no, I cannot be helped here, and then I said, cannot move further. So I'm saying those are the little things that we will always appreciate with department. And that's how we would have loved to work with you. Not only with presentations and things, but about how we do our work as well as people's representatives. Alright, my next question is another now. Because I wanted to check if she was counselor in Africa, but I've now seen the project. so the my questions are answered in the next page. I can commit. But I still have one, two. On your industrial development, on the finalization of key sector strategies, I see. On the finalization of your sector strategies, I didn't hear you speaking about that. If you can say something. And I'm saying this because you see, in the rural areas, areas where the others, except for me, it is these three other members come from the owners. And Mkono is a small scale farmer. So it would say something. And also there again, on jobs that were created. Are those permanent jobs or are those fish jobs as we call them? You are not very clear on the idea. You're not saying anything. Other than what I saw here, it's not telling me anything. The progress in Mocha, for instance, if there's any. Where the last time we went to East London, they were still putting up some structures and trying to put infrastructure as well. That was about 3 years ago. And alright, the last one for now. On your trade investment and export, you know, if for instance when you have some activities in the province, if you could invite members from that particular province, it would assist us as well. If, for instance, you have something in Mpumalanga, you don't have to invite us all. But at least you could assist us better if a member from that particular province is invited. So that we work better with our provincial counterparts. And, yes, I'm still just moving in to the time. This is the last one. Just say something more on co-op spec. And I would assume that would have been between you and treasure. Particularly for all our areas. I mean, I know there are co-op spec. As to how we are moving, let's not discuss that one here. We can engage those things.
Thank you very much, Coach. I was becoming a little bit nervous with Comrade Temba because two of the questions we asked have cancelled out the two she had in charge. So I think that's what we know. Chief, thank you very much. I'm very pleased to see what has been written in the last bullet of the economic context, which said modest improvement in manufacturing growing 5% last year driven by buoyant domestic market. That 5% is the one that has been on. We one time came to Ukraine in 2006, and we learned there from the discussion we had in the department that the manufacturing industry was having serious problems. And it was functioning below capacity. Now, when I see this fight, it tells me something that relieves me to succeed. But I'm really happier if you could very briefly characterize the capacity level at which that industry generally is functioning. I don't have a problem with the fact that I'm very efficient. But let's look at the capacity level of the functioning of the industry. Perhaps that will go a little further. Secondly, this one, has to do with the report I got last week from my region, but not my constituency area. And I don't know what to do. Perhaps you can assist SDGI before I hand over this matter to the comrade whose constituency office embraces the area where the report is. I was phoned by two comrades who are part of the team, the group that has been encouraged by the Department of Economic Development and Tourism in our province to come together and buy a section of a particular mall at Biang. and part and parcel of the overall LED activities involving the Maspala, the district and the local. Now they say to me, the people from whom this part of the money was to be bought wanted 6 million. Now they managed to raise 3.4. Now they wanted to know what they could do. So I said to them, let them go to the DTI offices in Toyano, the area where we get assistance from the DTI. Now when they went there, they said to me, they were told that the DTI encourages such people to come together and take ventures in agriculture sector, not property. Now, from here, I don't know what it is that can be done, but they said from there they went to F&B. And F&B said to them they are not comfortable with giving them the remaining money because they don't know in case the whole thing collapses, they don't have the perfect position to get their money. So perhaps the DTI might, and not necessarily from within the department only, but whatever avenue, so that when I hand over this matter to the comrades whose constituent office is there, I need also to indicate that I consulted at point 123. Thirdly, I just want to find out what role does the department play through the province, the ministry, to guide the municipalities that engage in overseas training. You know, you find this must qualify because we have a situation, again, not in my constituency area, in another area where that training resulted in very good economic activities in terms of the overseas Maspal, but coming with it is an element where the comrades from within find it very difficult to access that very area where the development is being embarked on with the overseas training Maspal. It becomes a problem where we all need to go in, but then the question is, how was this conducted for a lot? What agreements did our Maspala people sign when they were tuning with the other ones so that we can have the world time to undo some of these things? Number four, Chief, I read this property breakfast, very big business, what? About 3 or 4 months ago, they were saying, some African dairy products were barred from the European Union market. And they gave, I don't remember whether it was a month or two, to sort out our problem. Unfortunately, I couldn't get anything that indicates that from here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 were done by South Africa, and then there's that, the product will welcome drink water. But so, what went wrong? And then secondly, how much economic disadvantage is in do we suffer from that? Just in general terms. I'm having the last one because I'm afraid I don't want to end up being out of order. Chief, you indicated that there are a lot of companies of our own operating outside our border, especially in Africa. What governs the activities of these companies? For instance, here at home, we have measures like the Labor Relations Act, the transference of the skills to the local, the ones that operate outside, do we have a way of getting them behave the way they do here to expensive, or we leave them to the agreement they have with the countries the government of the countries where they operate? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The presentation I read together with you is the annual report. I'm sure the department knows what I'm talking about when I go to the annual report. My first question is on the annual report, it is page 72, it relates to the field development. There it says that on technicians and associated professionals. The technician and associate professionals. You see, at the finance level, we have six under field development I want to know if the department has got plans to increase that number in the future, because in the country we have a shortage of technicians. Is there any plan to increase that number, please? And then, 576. On the foreign workers, there is occupation. We see there other occupations. I want to know if the occupation is an occupation that cannot be called from South Africa, or actually what kind of occupations are those people other than identified. Then on page 18, I'm only 4%.
Pardon?
Yes, sir. Other occupants. Yes, sir. Okay,
yeah. Other
occupations. We have this xenophobia, so I don't think it's right if we have unemployed professionals of skills and then we use people from foreign countries. That's why I'm interested in the identification of the others. Page 18, on the grievances lodged. What kind of grievances is coming to the department? One or two, you can just give us some, like one or two, just to get up on par. And then the last question, page 83, is on the agricultural training skills. I think on the table here is the skilled agriculture and fishery workers. I see a lot of zeros. I'm wondering on that one only, except on other zeros. Skilled agriculture, it is training device. Don't we have people that need agriculture skills, or we have family skills that are looking to be further skilled training?
If my strategy serves me well, I will engage the TG in my constituency. One or two issues with regard to the unknown report, I'm happy just to see that in the sheet. But then I complain about the high vacancy rate on denomination. But then that was that year. I'm sure you would have shed some light on the present financial rights up to date on the high vacancy rate on denomination. But there is this issue about the human resources plan. How far have you gone? Is it in place now so that you could have this strategy, attention and all the commissioning? And also there's this issue on the financial statement on page 148 about the buzzery. There are two types, you say buzzery to staff and buzzery other. If you could clarify that. Debtors, it talks about debtors, staff debtors and other debtors. It talks about buzzers. I think 148. I'm sure you're there now.
Yeah.
So it tells that issue. Just a matter of clarification. But then you keep on talking about developing and growing the economy. And the question I ask myself is, who is being developed and who is growing? Is it somebody from where I sit? Is it somebody from the first economy or from the second economy? You develop from somewhere. To me, those that are in the first economy are developing. To me, those that were in the second economy are supposed to grow. Can we really say, this is how far we're moving? According to your plans and strategies. That's why I said some of the issues are already here. On your slide 18, there's this issue about the Company Act, which you are going to do something about it. But then my problem is, irrespective of the Company Act, you still have your PFMA. You can have your company, you can change it. It's a 1974, but the PFMA is new. The PFMA says, if you want to do something, you must do 1, 2, 3. Which people in the second economy, or who want even to be in the second economy, cannot even do. How are you going to reconcile these two? I know it's not in your line of duty about the PFMA, but what I'm trying to highlight is, this is a big challenge. If I say to you, if you want a position, if you want to apply for this position, you must have matric. And most of the people have been passed who have matric, and all have grade 1. The process will be okay, you can advertise and only get matric, but then you get only those that have matric. The same thing with the PFMA. The issue about the trademark of 2010, that Bloemfontein, but FIFA has been given this 2010. We got this report. It was also on the news that you cannot use the 2010. You can, on any, I think if people have some wrong information, I'm sure the department needs to communicate, very clear. The last one is, the department is one of the biggest couples with foreign affairs. And I ask myself, do you have a joint office? If you want to engage, whether in Africa or somewhere, you must run DTI and you must run foreign affairs. If they just, a joint office, so you could have open our one stop shop for the country. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I know it's like this is catching with the second time you see it, but unfortunately, I don't control myself. It's called
power. I'm trying to cooperate with you to answer very quickly.
And if you do, then you have to feel the
on slide 3, I'm very impressed to see that approximately 500 jobs per annum are being created.
we talk of unemployment, we talk of sexual unemployment, sexual unemployment, physical unemployment, like location, and so those are the ones that are able to understand where and so what is the impact. And question number two, that's also on slide number 18. Where you talk of a competition policy review completed starting from amendment to have started. And you are saying the department is going to start with for the launching of petition and stuff like that to pick up the imprisonment and deal with that. But you really have capacity to monitor and deal with that at the department. Where can you access? Because I think that's a big issue. The third one is again on Mabuka Mede's work around the FIFA trademark. And in terms of our intellectual property act, do we have to relax the laws to accommodate FIFA so that for future purposes we benefit from whatever kind of event there is, or is it because we are merely protecting our enterprise? Because there has to be a balance in time here between it, and of course to emphasize the fact that campaign around that to be testified. The fourth one is around the EFCOM. I don't want to label it as a crisis, but the problem that we're facing in terms of our economic, where do we stand? Are we still on the 62 band in terms of increasing our economy? And also, our local authority, how does it affect our LEP? At the present moment. And lastly, the thing that we're confronted with is major problem of a shortage of skills. Do you perhaps have a mechanism that CI where we say if we are to issue out letters to this department, we have on contractual basis a clause that actually enforces the company to provide skills. So that it goes with the license.
Thanks, Jason. Honorable Lady, asked my question about the human resource plan. So I was just going to ask one other brief question. On the report of the Auditor General, the material non-compliance of the applicable legislation with regards to the National Liquor Authority's complete register, I just would like to know whether that has been addressed yet.
I wanted to request her that next time she might give us an opportunity to ask questions so that it was now my question that I was supposed to ask them. But nonetheless, it would be thanks for the presentation. And mine is on the fact finding meeting on the 25th. Of the the document on the industrial and regional industrial development, the document finally is closed on the river report, and I think that it has been finalized, and it will be intended that the document will be submitted to the president to come in and consider it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, all of the members, for a very good question. I think all of you have a very good question. Some of them are very difficult questions, too. I have looked at the request of the chair for Section 26 bill, and I will convey that to the minister. Now, of course, you know agriculture is responsibility of the Department of Agriculture. However, we have an interest in what happens in the area of agriculture because we are responsible for agro-processing. And you will see, if you look at the work we're doing in the national policy, we have a strategy for the agro-processing sector. Even our agencies, by the way, the IDC, they are starting a number of initiatives in this area, including in this province. For example, berries, when they reported last year, we saw that they were involved in berries, they were involved in wine, and so on. Last week had the opportunity to visit the canning industry, the food canning industry in Ashton, which is a very economically depressed area there. So we have an interest in environment in agriculture, and the Department of Agriculture has now been asked to elaborate a comprehensive strategy, agricultural development strategy. Because there are a number of things in this area that are worrying. For example, we have liberalized our agricultural sector quite significantly since the 1990s. Subsidies, we don't subsidize the single vendors, the European food, so on. And the question that has been asked, which we all have to answer with the Department of Agriculture, is whether we may have liberalized far too much, and that we do need, in fact, to consider how we support particularly subsistence farmers, small farmers, because the big agro farms, agro industries, they can look after themselves. But the smaller people, smaller farmers need assistance, and that is something that we need to look at. And it's unfortunate that the vehicle of the Department of Agriculture for this purpose, Land Bank, as you know, has been caught up in promises and so on. But we are looking at this because we have to work with the Department of Agriculture. So it is a very important thing from a point of view of addressing the job unemployment situation, under development in the marginalized areas. So we think that going forward it will be something that we're giving a lot more emphasis in. It is in our industrial policy framework document, by the way. It is included in the document, and we speak to the issue. So we're between work in that. The second question, which was also repeated by the last speaker, was on the jobs, on the nature of jobs. Now, the truth is that the greatest job creation has been in services, has been in the retail industry. Because retail has been the fastest growing sector of the economy, with major job options. But service more generally, you know, this includes your restaurants and your shopping malls and your Woolworths, Petcars, and Pick&Pays and so on. Those are the companies that have been creating jobs. You asked about sustainability of these jobs. That's a major and a very valid concern. Because compared to manufacturing, services jobs tend to fluctuate with the business cycle. If the consumer demand shrinks, as it is shrinking right now with interest rates going up, that has a very sharp knock-on effect on the economic creation. So those jobs are not fully secure. Of course, there's a category of jobs in those areas which are depending on skill, which won't likely be sustainable. So the vulnerability of a job depends on the extent to which it depends on the business cycle, as well as on the skill, the level of skill. The higher the skill content, the more secure the job is likely. Because your accountant will possibly, in the retail sector, will possibly just keep their job, whatever happens. But the people who in the merchandise and so on, they are the ones who can change off very quickly. And this is something that Consarchi will be talking with Consarchi. They are very, very concerned about this trend towards casualization. But of course, casualization is a global phenomenon. So how you deal with it is not so easy. The best safeguard, I think, is to do a lot more skilling of people. We've got to skill as much as possible our people. That's the best way in which you're going to do your job. But equally would be to develop our manufacturing employment capability. Because you will know that people that work in the factories where they engage in manufacturing activities, they keep their jobs forever. They keep their jobs. When I was growing up, the people that work in the factories, they work there for years and years and years. So manufacturing, sustainable jobs, manufacturing is the key for us. And that's why this industrial policy that we're developing must be accompanied by massive creation of jobs. Of course, we can see the jobs are not in large quantities as yet. But when they are created in manufacturing, they tend to last a lot. So that is a challenge that we confront. So the challenge of jobs is a very, very difficult, very, very difficult. And I might add that part of our challenge in terms of our industrial policy is that to the extent that it is prioritizes job sustainable employment creation, it's not clear what sector is going to lead to that. There's no one sector of the economy that can solve your unemployment problem. So we have to work on a broad front of sectors. You know, you see that people sometimes say, but the national policy is all over the show. Because they want us to say that our national policy is going to focus on the three or four sectors. It's not possible. It's not possible. Because we have a very diversified industrial base. There are pockets of excellence and potential across the manufacturing sector as a whole. So we've got to be looking at opportunities across one of the sectors to create jobs. That is the fundamental reality that we face. We are at a stage of our development where we have to look at all sectors and even retain jobs in sectors that are highly challenged, like clothing and textiles. So when we introduced the quotas in clothing and textiles, the idea was to save cut the jobs that exist there. Because you cannot, the industry suffers a hemorrhage of jobs. So the response is at least retaining the existing employment. If you can grow it, well and good, but at least prevent the hemorrhage. The idea that perhaps Tibedo might address that later on, so what's the progress? Because I spoke to Kuchana on hand, but we may be more specific, I think. But there's no doubt that we're making progress in the program. This IDZ, which, as you know, seeks to establish industrial infrastructure so that we can invite attractive investment. The experience with China and other places is that if you want investors to come to your economy, you've got to provide them the infrastructure. You've got to build the roads, you've got to make sure that they have access to water and access to electricity. So it's as simple as that. If you don't do that, then they won't come to your economy. And that is the philosophy of the IDZ. So we've put in funding huge resources in those areas. But the returns are beginning to come. Because people say, well, how do you know that you're going to attract investment if you push in this infrastructure? I don't have any fear that these will be white elephants. So we've been making good progress and there's a huge investment pipeline that's growing in relation to these development zones, industrial development zones. I think if I touch on the issue of manufacturing, and I have spoken to this a little bit, is that our manufacturing in South Africa has been in trouble for a very long time. It has had turmoil since the last 15 to 20 years for a variety of reasons. I think in our situation, part of the reason has been the fact that our manufacturing developed under protection behind closed borders and relied too much on that protection. It didn't invest in technology, it didn't upgrade technological capabilities, didn't train workers. Because if you look at the similar activities that we are involved in manufacturing and compare ourselves to other countries, they have been training and upskilling their workers for a very long time. But our manufacturing capacity, other development, technology, machinery, and so on, is closing the textiles. We know that part of the problem in closing the textiles is that these people have not invested in machinery. Labor practices, industrial organizations, still very backward. So a lot of the pain of our manufacturing is self-inflicted pain. And of course, the major challenge in manufacturing is that there's no economic empowerment in our manufacturing sector. The owners of firms are often people that don't quite have the confidence. So they didn't have the confidence in the future. They underinvested. They didn't expand fast. They didn't declare the economy is going to grow as fast as it has. So that is the fundamental root of our manufacturing challenge. But of course, as the economy has grown, as demand has grown, manufacturers have seen an opportunity, particularly to supply the domestic market. More and more people with incomes are entering the economy and demanding all manner of goods. So I think that there's hope, and we would not be elaborating an industrial policy if we didn't think that the manufacturing in the future. And as you know, we've now opened up, over the last 10 years, we've opened up the borders to foreign manufactured goods coming here, competing. And we know that we can compete quite effectively in certain areas. We have advantages that enable our manufacturers to compete, not only in the domestic market, but even in foreign markets. So subject to appropriate conditions in terms of the interest rate, exchange rate, we think that manufacturing has a future, that we will be working very hard at CTI to support manufacturing. I think the problem of access to finance, around the year that you were talking to, sounds more like is an area that some of our agencies can help us with. For example, Kula gives loans up to 3 million, or it is guaranteed. But the problem is, Kula is this protection of that problem. If you go to a bank and they borrow me 3 million rand, they want your surety, collateral. So that's where Kula comes in. So you may want to refer them to Kula. NEF, they do slightly, National Empowerment Fund, they do slightly bigger loans and so on, that's 3 million. So that you may also want to check. And then of course, IBC is much, much, much larger funding. I would say that maybe you to refer them to check those things. And I can assist if necessary. I didn't understand your question about municipal twinning, but clearly these twinnings are useful where the strategic objective is to leverage the capacity, expertise that the particular foreign municipality can offer you. And I would hope that these agreements are not just about mayors cutting ribbons and taking pictures, but that in fact, because some of them are very generous, they can provide expertise, they can send people here, and maybe if one wants to say something about them, we can learn, because municipalities also play a critical role in promoting investment and creating conducive environment for business. So if you learn how the others are doing it, especially with the foreign municipalities where sometimes they have large investments, how they invest, how they do it. So they are critical. But the municipalities sometimes can make the difference about whether you get an investment, a large investment, or not. And I'm sure municipalities will know this because we interact with them when on some of the investments that we do for the public. So there are these twinning agreements and so on. I haven't had a sense of what they entail, but I would hope that capacity to exchange of people, they can take some of our people so that they can get the connections and so on. For those governments that are very supportive, and countries that are very supportive of us, we can really benefit from these things. Maybe you want to deal with the issue of access of our dairy products, I think of cheese and so on. Europeans are very sensitive to sanitary standards. that Italian students have suffered for food. They're very sensitive. They have in the past presented our oranges, presented our eggs, our baby, and various other products. But I don't know how these are governed by international law, because sometimes under the pretext of saying safe concerns, they can protect certain of their industries. So it is a very sensitive issue, even in the negotiations in the World Trade Organization. What you are allowed to do, what you can or may not do in regulating the access of foreign food products into your market.
Has the gen suggested that there is a possibility of our shops operating with standards that are lower than theirs? I mean, it's one of the things that we need to think in one's mind.
Sure. Often the standards of shops use are international standards. But in the area of food, governments, foreign governments, have some discretion as well to determine whether, if you are concerned, for example, if you come and look at our chief factories, and in fact, if they feel that they don't quite comply with the standards, they may say that they will not accept the chief, but maybe they want to. It's a long time, but I used to know these things. How they were. Well, I was seeing that way. It's a long time now. So we'll be transferred from that. You raise a very important issue which concerns us a great deal with the Department of Foreign Affairs about how South African business conducts themselves when they are abroad. Because we have been getting concerns foreign government, African government, saying that, for example, in terms of race relations, that they know that we ended apartheid in South Africa. So corporates have to abide by a non-racial law. But they go out and they export apartheid. In some of the countries where they do business, separate holidays and so on, we hear the stories like this. And of course, this is something that concerns us. But it may be one business, but it keeps all our businesses a bad name. So much so that there's even the idea whether we should not have a code of conduct of how to conduct ourselves. How we should expect our corporates to we would ideally want organizations like BOOS, CHAMS, so on, to raise this so that they regulate themselves and we don't have government to intervene. But there's been a concern. And now, of course, we also hear about empowerment today. In South Africa, they have to do empowerment, but when they go outside, they don't do. They don't take local people and include them in the business. They don't sometimes even when they can source some of their inputs, those countries, they don't. So they come in, they wipe out local factories and so on, local businesses, which generates a lot of political animosity against them. And that's why sometimes when the Chinese come, they say, we don't have to do it for the Chinese and not South Africa. This is a very, very complex and challenging issue, but you are quite right. It's something which we will have to engage with as we go forward. I was looking at those HR categories, occupation as a category, and it just struck me how outdated they are. And and we know we will have to take this up with the Department of Public Services Administration. Because you see, occupational festivals I can't define, but I know that that I rely on the word due to an occupational festival that I'm not necessarily reflected here. It's economies, the national economies, and so on. So these may apply to some other departments, much more relevant for other departments than ourselves. And that's why you see lots of zeros. That's why you see lots of zeros. I don't know, for example, in the context of the DGI, what a technician is, what kind of a person is a technician. But I know that I need trade lawyers, I need trade economies, I need industrial economies, and so on, which are very difficult skills, anyway, to get. Come on, you look like you want to say something about this, so that maybe you should also comment. Agriculture and fisheries is much more appropriate to the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, they do fisheries and agriculture, if I understand. This is a problem which we are addressing. You see, we have a bit of a challenge. That we didn't have for a very long time a DDG for HR, and so a lot of the work of developing strategies, HR strategies, and HR plans, and so on. And in that area, we in the department, that's one of the areas that we experienced a large turnover, especially when I was doing it in my job. But I'm pleased that we have now got a DDG, very experienced person who is already in government, and we are working on this. So we are addressing this issue, and I think there was also a question referring to the annual report, the Auditor General thing. So we are addressing that. And as you will, I should have said this by the way, that we are coming back here in another month. In 4 weeks' time, we present our strategic plans going forward. At that point, we will have much more details, specific details on the screen. Very important. There was a question of who is being developed and so on, in terms of the second economy and so on. Clearly, historically, indeed, the Department of Trade and Industry has always been supporting people in the first economy. There's no doubt about that. But you know that since 1994, the Democratic Government, people adopted programs to target people in the second economy, black people, women. It's a challenge, because this is if you talk about economic development, the greatest challenge economic development is how you include the majority, the millions of our people who were never workers. That is the fundamental thing. I would even say that in fact actually the white established businesses many of them don't even come to the TGI. They know that our emphasis is different now. Those that come are those that come for large projects, large investments that we support, large initiatives that few black people can even dream of undertaking investment projects like that. Those that still come, and they, because they are large, you will see that they account for large part of the support available for those particular projects. But I'm happy that we have started to support lots of black people. And that's a work in progress. We are creators. Going forward, we will be evaluated more on what we are doing to close the gap. And we're very, very concerned about it. It cannot be that we continue to support people who are already privileged. It can't be. I think I have no doubt that that's not the issue. We support businesses that deserve the support and that grow, but many of them are black people. Just as an anecdote, I have someone who's been trying to get hold of me, calling my office and so on. And then I bumped into this gentleman at the airport. Then he said to me, you can get away, you can run away, but you can't get away. That's what he said to me. All he wanted to tell me is how thankful he was for the DCI. He wanted to convey his personal thanks to me for the support that he got from the DCI in landing a major business deal. And I was very touched by this. And I said, thank you for telling me, because we'd like to feedback to say who are the people that were helping. And we, from a communication point of view going forward, we will be running a program now where we give a face to the numbers. You see the numbers? Now we want to actually have those, go to those businesses, look at them, talk to those people, let them share with the others. So we have agreed with the SABC to do a television program that is going to showcase certainly what we can offer and to talk to some of the beneficiaries so that people can see. Indeed. So, but of course, it's a long way to go. As I said, with more resources, we can do better. And of course, we still have challenges ourselves, just in terms of our effectiveness. Sometimes we say it to leave our deals on. So we're looking at our pieces. But our orientation is very clear. The PFMA governs corporate governance in the public sector completely. The Companies Act does the same thing in the private sector. There are some commonalities and so on in terms of principles. For example, we need to have in the public service as well, I must have an executive committee that must meet regularly, I must have plans, I must set very clear targets and outputs, and I must report all of that. Do that. That's what the CFMA does. The company's law does the same thing. The directors, disclosures, and so on and so forth. So I'm not aware that there's any confusion. In fact, the company's law has not proposed to overturn the CFMA. The CFMA will exist because it's there for the public service and the non-profit making entity. So, we have not given the number. We don't own the, no one owns the number 2010, so no one can give it to anyone. Neither could FIFA claim the number. They didn't claim the number as a number. But they claim the number in combination with other names, Western Cape 2010, or Sullivan Day 2010. Those are some of the things that they were doing. South Africa 2010. I don't even think we gave them. We didn't give them that. South Africa 2010. You are right. We must communicate. We must create public awareness. Because it may be that people are afraid, you see, to venture into this area because they think that this is a protected name. So, includes foreign affairs, and I'm sure that you will expand on that. It's a relationship that's come a long way. And we are located, our offices are located in embassies that are run by foreign affairs. Our staff, when they are posted abroad, they report to ambassadors who are deployed by foreign affairs. So I think you don't have to go to different places. If you are in Tanzania, in London, Mozambique, you will find us sitting side by side with foreign affairs. But it's even there, to a point where even where we are not present, foreign affairs represent us. And they do our work for us. And now we are locally doing joint training of our people with foreign affairs. The capacity to monitor is a major deal with respect to competition. So I said to the competition authorities, the scorpions are being reintegrated with the bee. So they possibly won't be called scorpions anymore. So I was joking, not quite joking, but I think I was making the point to our competition people, say, I want them to become competition scorpions, to be able to go out there and uncover people that abuse competition law, that infringe competition law. So last year they offered a major budget increase to do precisely that, to employ more people. They don't have investigators. But it's a discipline in law, they have lawyers. But they realize that to be a lot more effective, they need investigators. So we will be going in that direction. We are going in that direction. Treasury gave us some money. They didn't give us everything that we asked for, but they gave us the money to start beefing up the capacity of the competition authorities. So we'll be working on that. I think it's going to be a fight. Yes, we are monitoring the impact of the power. Now, of course, this is not something for the annual report, but it, because it's a new issue, which could undermine, obviously, the work that we have been doing. And we are very concerned about this. We are part of the task team that is being established to respond. And we have things that we can do as a department. We can contribute to alleviate the situation. And we are working on all of those things. For example, the building standards for new buildings are regulated by TTI. So that we can then we are looking at doing new regulations that make it compulsory to put energy efficient fittings, whether it's your heat or whether it's your bath. So we are involved. Now, of course, the issue of the impact on LED is quite serious, because the big companies or big customers of Telco, they got muscle and Telco listen to them. But the people who are hard hit are the small business people. And we saw in the outages, a lot of them complain. They are hard hit. They don't have generators. They don't have money to invest in alternative energy. Especially the people who work in perishable business products. So the impact of this on LED, on small business, and small businesses are very critical to LED. It can be quite significant, and we are very concerned about that. So we would like to see also, because we are promoting small businesses, as the people who must speak in the power situation in this electricity, both from a business. Telcom, Epcom has no way of interacting with them directly. Many of them get the power supplied by municipalities and so on. So it's an area that is challenging, but we're looking at that. So, youth development is something which we must use our leverage to promote. It's clearly a very, very important area, and we do so when companies can help government business, youth development, or when we use consultants. They have to, there must be a clause that has to say that they must transfer skills. Technology transfer in this major consultancy contracts that we do. But also the PE codes, skills development is an element of the PE scorecard. If you can demonstrate that you are developing skills on for your workers and so on, then you get some credit for the PE point of view. But it is an important I think I'll let you speak to some of the fact finding, what the purpose and what we try to do in these fact finding missions. And this one really will speak on the coordination of provinces. But on the REITs, this regional industrial development strategy. Now, since we came here and we did take the presentation, both in the portfolio committee and in this. So we finished the document, and it seeks to identify how, in whatever, all of the things that we're doing, we can increasingly also target promoting even geographically balanced growth so that we don't have the perpetuation of Gauteng, KZN, with the Cape dominating economic growth and dominating the uptake of our incentives. But if you look at our incentives, those businesses that take up all of these offerings, they have to be in these sources year after year. But of course, if there are no enterprises on the ground, if there are no people who are aware of what the PCI can offer, then that perpetuates. So this says how to look at the issues with potential. How do you leverage the potential? Working with the people of the craft, working with the government, municipal government, district municipalities and so on. And as a result, we have as I said, it's not an area that we've been very strong in, but we are now moving in. We've now got a place in the DGI dedicated to working with municipalities to build capacity. To build the capacity of municipalities to do economic planning, economic development work and so on. And we targeted 18 municipalities on a trial basis where we will go in work with them. Capacity to build their capacity and enhance the capacity. There's obviously a lot of donor money available, which some of the municipalities are not able to spend and so on. But we also look over the long term, and that's why this thing requires a debate. Whether you should create a fund, because in Europe they've got that. They've got a fund dedicated to supporting regional economic development. So Europe, for example, all of the countries, they claim this fund, and we can use it for infrastructure, for many other projects, economic projects. In the remote areas. So, of course, this is an integral part of our industrial policy strategy, our industrial strategy, the national industrial policy document that we released last year. But I'm sure my colleagues will come in and supplement very briefly, because we don't want to take too much more time. Thank you very much indeed for all of those questions, and I really enjoyed the engagement with you. Thanks.
Thank you, Daddy.
chairperson. I think the, well, first of all, let me also thank honorable members for their questions. I think each has answered questions that have been posed. I'll just pick up on a couple of additional points. I think the one question on the issue of dairy exports to the EU, my understanding of the problem that arose last year, towards the end of the year, was really about beef. There was a ban on beef, and that had to do, I think, precisely with DG's indicated that something was an investigation or a suspicion South Africa didn't meet the standards that had been set by the EU. This is an issue that the Department of Agriculture took up directly. I remember seeing the DG of Agriculture in Brussels dealing with this issue specifically. And the sense was that it was, to a large extent, a misunderstanding. And that what would require that there were some new regulations that had arisen in the EU that would need to deal with. But the sense was that that would be addressed fairly quickly. So I don't have the most recent information on that. My sense was that the Department of Agriculture had that in hand. The issue of the cheese is an ongoing part of an unfinished negotiating business with the EU. Very sensitive in this area to South African exports, and we have also had some interest in their market to sell some of our cheese, and this has been a part of an ongoing negotiation that we have not been able to resolve probably since about 2000. So it's part of the built-in agenda with the EU. Again, the Department of Agriculture takes the lead on this. But I also think there has been some progress in the course of last year, but we are not there yet. The other question, I think, about South African, how South African companies operate in Africa, I think, again, DG has raised the issue. Essentially, questions about South African companies operating in the region, they are governed by the local legislation, the national legislation in those countries. So within whatever labor legislation or environmental legislation or such like, that would be the legislation that is appropriate. And that often is not as developed as it is in South Africa, and so they're able to get away with a lot more, perhaps, unbecoming conduct than they would in South Africa. And I think one of the, because we, these types of negative comments, which not in all cases, I mean, I think it's important that we should also over-exaggerate it, because I think sometimes we get criticized by our neighbors in the region unfairly. But I think where the criticisms are accurate, the idea of developing a code of conduct for South African business operating in the region of probably one important intervention, but I think at the end of the day one has to realize that these companies are governed by national legislation in those countries. There was a question about the, in terms of moving into Africa, for instance, we have a one-stop shop, that was one of the questions. Again, Gigi has indicated that in almost every country in Africa, there is an embassy, and that would be the contact point in those countries. But I also understood the question to probably also mean, what do we do, how do we work together in South Africa? And again, I think the entry point into the Department of Foreign Affairs is largely interested in this kind of overall political engagement. But increasingly, Foreign Affairs is getting involved in some of the economic and trade issues. But at home in Pretoria, the entry point into trying to participate in this would be the Department of Trade. So I think there are overlaps. CISA is involved, ICED is involved. The department is the first takes the lead on
economic interactions in the region. And while we're coordinating with foreign affairs, I don't think we're at the point yet where we say we're the one-stop shop. I think we have to be built up more than on that. I think the last question that was posed in my direction was the question of what came up technical missions, the list of technical missions. And I think I think we could come back. I would have to submit further information on what the specific of the technical meeting that we did that by the land, Malawi, Madagascar, a number of others. But I think in general these technical missions should be seen as part of a methodology of how we develop an understanding of a particular economy. The fact finding mission is really to get a sense from these economies, what are the growing sectors, what are the types of economic needs that they would have. That gives the type of broad sense. It's followed up by a technical mission which tries to look at a more detailed technical level of what are the key growth sectors, how that would match with South African export opportunities or trade opportunities or investment opportunities. But again, the government doesn't invest or trade directly, so it has to be complemented with business missions. And I think in the presentation as it was, we hadn't got there yet. So the actual investment opportunities, the trade opportunities that would arise would need to be developed by business. I think, in a sense, from the department's point of view, we play a facility role. We provide a platform for those engagements. But at the end of the day, it would be business interactions that would identify specific opportunities. But we would be prepared to submit some more information if any of these have been more clearly identified. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other
questions?
Yes.
I on the DG's comments regarding using industrial development zones. As the DG has already indicated, really one of the main objectives of the IDZ program is to actually provide infrastructure for as an attraction for investors, especially foreign direct investment. And in terms of the progress that has been made with the IDZ, with both the Kuka Industrial Development Zone and the East London Industrial Development Zone, key infrastructure projects within those zones have been completed. And the infrastructure that mostly has been finalized at East London IDZ has been able to complete the automotive supplier park, which was being developed to support some of the automotive companies that are in the East London area. And already the IDZ has been able to sign close to about 15 investors, and 10 of those investors are on site and are operating factories and are employing close to about 865 jobs. In the Kuka Industrial Development Zones, again, you know, Kuka has completed or finalized infrastructure provision in what they call the core development area of the IDZ. And the bulk infrastructure that has been provided there is water, is electricity, road infrastructure. And Kuka is also beginning to show quite a lot of success with attracting investors. In the reporting period, I think they managed to sign on 9 investors. 8 of them signed disagreements with the CDC, and 4 of the investors are also on site. They are producing the processes that have already been constructed, and 3 were expected to commence, you know, effective development in the reporting period. Of course, as you said, that one of the biggest achievements at Kuka during the reporting period was the signing of the Alcan Agreement for an aluminium smelter that is going to be developed there by a French company. company, and now he's a Canadian company, and we have interns from Monash International. But I never completed during the recording period, and promises to bring in about 21 billion rand in foreign direct investment.
Thank you, Chairperson. There are three areas that the DG proposed I touch on. The area of twinning agreements, I think the DG did speak to it, but essentially we have a proliferation of these agreements. There's too many, some at city level, some even at province level. Most of them are in fact reactionary. So the other countries propose, and then we just say okay. And then we find ourselves with multiple requests.
I don't know what the
And as you know, so we might sign an agreement with one city, and then we get a proposal from another one, and then we're stuck. Usually, these twinning agreements relate to social, cultural areas, and the economic area is not fully exploited. This is a problem of coordination, which in fact should be coordinated by foreign affairs, because they can provide the guidance, they can provide the expertise, they can provide the insight on the ground. And we as provinces and as municipalities should seek out our own vested interests and identify cities that we would like to twin with for our own national interests, and not the other way around. Sometimes there are serial twinners around in the world. Some cities, they just like to twin with a whole lot of cities and just to raise their profile, but no real work goes on. So in our context, the twinning agreements have not delivered much in terms of technology or skill transfer or even economic joint ventures. But that is an area that foreign affairs is seized with. Chairperson, on the issue of 2010, Gazette indicating what requests of FIFA were approved is on the DKI website. However, it is not easy for the layperson to interpret, so we are putting together what is known as a public information sheet, which will spell out clearly what are no-go areas in terms of intellectual property law. We are going to do a series of roadshows to all the host cities to roll out the economic benefits and opportunities, and clearly this IP list of areas where you can and cannot participate will be quite important. But that content is already out there on the DKI website and the 2010 website that government hosts. But in the next few weeks, we'll be rolling out these roadshows. We were supposed to roll them out last week, so we did an information session, but the presidency will request to lead in this exercise as well, so they'll be participating with us going forward on these host city workshops. On the issue of coordination with the provinces, this is an area that we've made some great strides in the last year. National TISA, particularly as an investment and export promotion arm of the DTI, was not very well plugged in and coordinated with provinces and cities. Now I can say that we have achieved a level of coordination because we've established a forum. We have a CEO's forum, which meets quarterly, and also a general manager's forum, which is more operational, which also meets quarterly. The most recent forum meeting we had was yesterday with all the provinces. And just to highlight some of the reasons why we should be coordinating, we've identified just on one small area savings, because all our budget comes from the same pocket as it were. We've identified a saving of just 11 million rand collectively, because all of us, TISA plus all the provinces, even the city, subscribe to certain databases. And we all subscribe to them. You know, for example, the Economic Intelligence Unit. However, if we get one subscription with 11 passwords, we can save 11 million rand. That's just one area. Now that's quite significant, considering when some of the provincial investment agencies only have a budget of 10 million rand, or 15 million rand. Also, the investment pipeline in the provinces and the cities is very small. The combined investment pipeline in the provincial investment promotion agencies stands at well under 10 billion rand. However, CISA's investment pipeline stands at 206 billion rand for this fiscal year. All that 206 billion rand has to be located in some province or in some city. So to that end, we've established a national investment committee where we will work with all the provinces and the city agencies to look at the geographic spread and look at where we can get the maximum multiplier effect of locating some of these investments. A large number of these investments, the investors have no particular view on where they should be located. Some investors say, no, definitely I want to be here. Others say, you tell us where we should be. You know. So to that end, we hope to convene this National Investment Committee so we can discuss at a very high level a mega project where they should be located, where the most need is, you know, and go from there. So we're looking at about 25,000 plus jobs in relation to our current pipeline. And most of these projects, in fact 90% of these projects would be realized within 3 years. And half of that pipeline is in fact mobilizing domestic investment, just within South Africa, and the other half is from foreign investment. So the coordination of the provinces has really taken off nicely. We had a very successful, we're committing to do one major national investment, trade and investment conference every year. Last year we did it in KZN. This year it's going to be in the Western Cape, and then we'll decide in subsequent years where it's going to be. But we're very happy with the progress that we're making, and we hope to report next year on some successes in this area. Thank you.
In relation to what the gentleman is saying, I was wrong to the Deputy General Minister not to say yes. But I think the Foreign Affairs Department would do us good to look at the context of all these, especially in my province, Limpopo, and those which are found to have a reactionary government in country. Number two, you know, when I have this issue of the director of the which, you know, is now centering around G, when I read that statute, I mean, from the person who does not have specifics in terms of the trade, I am instructed to come across a situation where South Africa is also saying, while we are sorting out the issue of our G, you must sort out the issue of your what can I say? Of your chocolate, something like that. Because you see, in political terms, if you say that the country, two of my family members in the Assembly are spies, if it is yours, I'm not going to go there and check, and I say it's yours, the two of them, they must go also. So we didn't say anything. Does it suggest indeed the way that? Oh, I don't know, or we are too meek. I just don't know what to say. I was expecting something like that, and the way you make input, it tells me, I may be wrong, that this chief has been going to them some time before, but now at this moment, they no longer want it. So we should say they must set myself their chief as well, while we put out their, I mean, when we put up their, our chief, they put out their chocolate, something like that. Why did people do that? I know it's a pity because
Thank you, Priyata. I just thought maybe I should comment on this. I'm thinking of the that the order support of the safety we've made substantial progress. I think at the department in terms of the National Authority being responsible for this, we have the legislation ready. Our day takes a bit longer when you work with the provinces, and we've made substantial progress in putting that together. I must say that wouldn't be completed in this financial year, but we hope to have it by the middle of the next financial year, finally, that particular aspect. Any other issues with respect to birth rates and the question was raised on the other,
what the department has done in order to develop the skills, particularly around economy, which we see as a bursary scheme, where you provide bursary for postgraduates to study, economists and work in the department. And those are largely people that don't work in the department at the moment. They will be doing it full time, and then once they finish, they'll come and work in the department. That's what the other bursary is.
On that note, I would like to thank the department, UG and your team, for the valuable information that you have given to us, and for your annual report. We will work on it in our community. And we are all invited to lunch and ask us to learn from Switzerland. So you are all invited, and thank you, members, for making them.
I'm not sure if you're going to be able to do that.